You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. Today's message is week one of our new sermon series, covering the book of Jonah. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
I'm curious how many of you have ever noticed how Christians seem to have a language all of their own, okay? They use words and phrases that like no one else in the world uses or really even understands, but somehow in really Christian circles, everyone seems to know what it means. If I'm being really, really honest with all of you here today, sometimes Christians, we say things that are just weird. Okay. In fact, there was a recent trend online where people were making funny videos of the things that other groups of people say. I think the very first set of videos were these guys pretending to be girls, making fun of all the things that girls say. And it wasn't long after that that Christians started making fun of themselves with short little videos titled Stuff Christians Say. Has anyone ever seen any of these videos? Okay, well, just for fun, we're going to watch one here today. Take a look at this.
Bless his heart.
You think he's backsliding?
I think I saw him drink.
Yeah, but in moderation.
I just wasn't seeing much fruit.
He's going down a slippery slope.
How's your heart, man?
How's your heart?
I'm just such a words guy.
It was a total God thing. I'm blessed. I've been working on my testimony.
Is that secular music?
We're opening with a secular song tonight.
Wait, is this a secular song?
Isn't she secular?
Which station's The Fish?
104.3 The Fish. Safe for the whole family. You know he's a believer. I think he's saved.
I just pray you'd give him traveling mercies. Mm. Pray for all Tyler's unspokens.
Mm. Echo that.
Just really like to echo Tyler's prayer, Father. I echo that echo of my echo of his echo.
I really feel like I'm being released from this, you know?
I'm trying to be relevant. I'm just trying to be in the world, not of it. Hey, do you want to join our small group? You want to join my D group? You want to join my cell group? Community group? Access group? Accountability group? Acts 27 group?
Dude, he brought it.
He brought the word. That service last night rocked me.
They're pretty purpose-driven.
Yeah, it's Seeker. Don't they do Seeker service there?
I feel like he's gotten really watered down.
I don't feel like he really teaches the word.
There's just not enough meat, you know?
Are they non-denom? We have a great Wednesday night supper.
Let's invite some dudes over and fellowship tonight.
We're going to have a sweet time of fellowshipping tonight.
Dude, we had the sickest fellowship last night. We're going to Extreme.
Velocity.
Ignite.
Yeah, I'm going to Ignite.
The Edge.
The Dive.
The Bridge. The Ramp.
Fire.
Courageous. Passion. Echo. Reverb.
Noise.
Velocity. Drive.
Elevate.
Radiate.
722.
635.
419.
Orange.
Blue.
Yellow. Green. Clear. Neon.
Catalyst Conference this year.
I don't do that because I feel like it ruins my witness.
Been struggling with that.
So I'm really wrestling with that.
Need someone to hold me accountable.
I'm really trying to be intentional with her. Will you hold me accountable to that?
Yeah, well, bounce your ass. Bounce your ass.
Dang it.
Crap.
Shoot.
Sheesh.
Frit.
Darn it. Not cool. I find that offensive.
I, too, would just like to echo the echo of their echo on the echo. Okay, this stuff is funny to me, and I think it's funny to all of us because it's so true. And I don't know how this happens. I don't know where this stuff comes from. I don't know if at the moment you invite Jesus into your heart, he downloads into your vocabulary a whole bunch of words and phrases with secret meaning that only other Jesus followers know. I'm not totally sure, but somehow there seems to be a collection of all the things that Christians say. And yet today, I'm not as concerned, even though we begin talking about that. Today, I'm not as concerned actually with the things that Christians do say as much as what they don't say. And so what I want to share with you today are actually the five words that I don't think Christians say enough. Now, before I get started, I want to acknowledge something just from the very beginning, that today won't necessarily be like a real feel-good message, okay? I'll just say that up front. But I think if we're open to the conversation, I think it could do a lot of good. And I think it could lead to a lot of good in our lives and in the places that we have influence every day. And so as we get into the heart of this, I just don't want you to think that I'm naive or oblivious or insensitive to what might feel a bit challenging today. I'm not naive. I'm not oblivious. I'm not insensitive to that stuff. But I do think that if we want to find the gold, sometimes we've got to face the fire. And so in the right doses and in the right way, I do think that we need to be challenged at times a little more often than we are. And today, I'm just acknowledging, might be one of those days as I reveal to you the five words that I do wish Christians said more often. And we're going to discover those five words as we begin a brand new message series through the Old Testament book of Jonah, starting in chapter 1. Here's just a little quick info on Jonah. Jonah's considered to be a prophet in the days of the Old Testament. A prophet is someone that God raised up and that God called to speak on his behalf to the people of that day for a specific purpose. Of calling people to turn from their sin and turn to God. That was Jonah. And so the book of Jonah in the Old Testament, it begins with God's call on Jonah, God's instructions for Jonah. And here's what it said if we start in verse 1. It says this, "The Lord gave this message to Jonah. Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh and announce my judgment against it because I have seen how wicked its people are." Now, Nineveh, again, just some helpful context here. Nineveh was one of the most kind of important cultural, centers in the ancient world at the time. It was a populated metropolis where many branches of art and learning and culture originated. But like so many populated cultural city centers in the ancient world, its people were far from God, and they were living lives far from God as well. And this is exactly where God sent Jonah. These are the people that God sent Jonah to speak on his behalf. And so the question is, how would this faithful, God-fearing, God-loving prophet respond? Essentially, Jonah said, "I'll pass. No, thank you." Okay, look at verse 3. It says this, "But Jonah got up, and he went in the opposite direction to get away from the Lord. He went down to the port of Joppa where he found a ship leaving for Tarshish." Now, I want to try to give you a physical and even a visual understanding of Jonah's response here. So look at this map you'll see on the screens behind me. He was instructed to go to Nineveh, okay? But instead, it says he went down to Joppa. A quick side note, "went down," as it's translated in Hebrew, was actually a euphemism for death, suggesting that with each step that he took in the opposite direction, he was one step closer to death. Just a little fun fact for you today, okay? So he went down to Joppa, and then he sailed 2,500 miles, at least he set out in that direction, 2,500 miles in the exact opposite direction toward Tarshish. I think this is what makes Jonah so relatable. I think if we were honest, I think we would have to admit that at times we do the very same thing. We all have moments where we feel like doing the exact opposite of what we know God has asked us to do. I think we all have moments where we say to God, "I don't want to. I don't want to forgive that person. I don't want to love that person. I don't want to care for that person. I don't want to wait till I'm married. I don't want to miss out on all the fun. I don't want to serve. I don't want to sacrifice any more than I already have. I don't want to raise my hand for that. God, I don't want to go into ministry. Pick someone else for that." This is how Jonah's feeling. He's not interested in going to Nineveh. He's like, "God, you can't be serious. That place is awful. Those people are the worst." In one translation of the Bible, he says to God, "God, I think they're Packer fans over there." Okay? He's going, "I don't want to do it. I'm not going there." And so he runs as far in the opposite direction as he can. He may have thought that he could outrun God. Okay, he may have thought that him fleeing the scene would result in God finding someone else for the job, but God's tenacity would soon be on display. So Jonah boards the ship And they set sail for Tarshish. And here's what happens next. God sends a powerful and a violent storm that threatened to break their ship in two. And the crew is freaking out. Look at verse 5. Fearing for their lives, the desperate sailors shouted to their gods for help. And they threw cargo overboard to lighten the ship. What this indicates is that this is a diverse group of sailors on the ship, okay? That what this indicates is that this crew, they aren't all God's people. They're not all, you know, people of Israel who worship the God of Israel. They all had their other gods, lowercase g, that all, you know, represented their people or represented the deities that, you know, they thought offered protection or that controlled the weather or the storm or whatever. There's no indication that these sailors called on these gods often. But like so many people, as soon as crisis happens, then everyone starts calling on some kind of higher power for help. And so this is what happens. They're calling on anybody who think, any God that might listen to them. Interestingly enough, Jonah is asleep during all of this. And so they're desperate for some God of someone to help them. And so the captain sends for Jonah, and the crew begs him to begin praying to his God. They're saying, hey, you get on in on this. They beg him to pray to his God. They say, maybe he will pay attention to us and spare our lives. Now, I'm not sure that these sailors, I'm not sure if they think that Jonah's God is any greater. They're just calling on any God who they think might listen to them and offer any help. They're calling on everyone and everything to come to their aid. Eventually, none of it helps, right? Eventually, the crew began to cast lots, which is, it's kind of just an ancient form of like divine discernment, right? And so they're casting lots to determine which of them had offended the gods, which of them had caused the storm. And as it would turn out, Jonah was the culprit. All signs pointed to him. And so now they're questioning him. Who are you? Where are you from? What have you done? And who is your God that you have offended so much? And so Jonah answered them, I am a Hebrew and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land. This freaked the sailors out even more. Number one, Jonah had already told them that he was running away from his God. And when they find out that his God is the God of the sea, which is kicking their butt at that very moment, they're like, oh my goodness, we are doomed. Jonah, what did you do? And so they ask Jonah, what do we do? What do we do now? And here's what Jonah says. Jonah says, throw me into the sea and it will become calm again. See, I think this is where we start to see that for, you know, as much as we can kind of relate to Jonah, I think this is where we're going to see that Jonah really is an example for us to follow. He says, throw me into the sea. And what he says next is what I want us to pay very, very close attention to today. What he says next highlights what it is that I wish we said far more often in the face of a storm. He says, throw me overboard, for I know that this terrible storm is all my fault. God gave Jonah an assignment. Jonah not only didn't listen to God, but he also ran in the opposite direction of God. But God sent a storm to get Jonah's attention, because sometimes a storm is the only thing that will get our attention. And this got Jonah's attention, and it got the attention of everyone around him. And Jonah starts to connect the dots. He starts to see how this is all lining up. And so Jonah admits five of the most powerful words that can turn our chaos into calm. Those five words are, this is all my fault. Christians say a lot of stuff, as we discovered at the beginning today, but rarely is it anything as close to this as maybe it should be. And I think that these are five words that we need to be ready to admit more often. Listen to me carefully. I'm not saying every time, all the time. But more often, these are the five words that we need to admit more often than we do right now. Because yes, there is crisis and there is conflict and there is tension and there are storms in this world and in your life that you had nothing to do with, okay? And so I'm not suggesting in any way that every bad thing or every storm that comes your way is your fault. That's not what I'm suggesting. Sometimes you are the innocent recipient of what is, you know, evil or unfair or undeserved in the broken world that we live in. But so many of the other times, and again, gang, I told you, I know this isn't a real feel-good message. I just think if we're open to it, it could do good and it could lead to good in our lives. Okay, so sometimes, yes, we're the recipient of the unfair things that happen to us. But so many other times, you and I, this is me too, we act like victims to the problems that we created or that we got ourselves into. Okay, our decisions, our behaviors, our actions got us into a mess, and then we want to blame someone else for it. Well, this isn't fair. Did you see what they did to me? Did you hear what they said to me? Well, what am I supposed to do as... And those can be hard places to be. I get it. Been there, okay? Those can be hard places to be, but I think that we have the ability to turn chaos into calm when we do the most courageous thing possible, which is to say, maybe this is on me. Maybe I had something to do with this. Sometimes we need to recognize that we got ourselves into a mess, and not only is the storm impacting us, but we've got to recognize that it's impacting a bunch of innocent people around us who just got caught up in the consequences of the choices that we made. Okay? This is what's happening with Jonah. He ran from God. And so God sent the storm for him, but everyone else got swept up into it. And Jonah has the wherewithal to say, hey, boys, you didn't deserve any of this, at least not right now. You didn't deserve this. He says, this one is on me. I'm the reason for the storm. This is all my fault. And after a few attempts to row the boat as hard as they could out of the storm with Jonah still on board, the crew finally gave up and they threw Jonah overboard. And the scriptures say the storm stopped at once. Look at the very next verse. The sailors were awestruck by the Lord's great power, and they offered him a sacrifice and vowed to serve him. You see the impact of one man's willingness to accept responsibility rather than to be the victim of his circumstances, okay? Jonah accepts the responsibility. This is on me. God's compassion is unleashed in powerful ways. And now a crew full of sailors who just moments before worshiped the gods of the sun and the moon and the stars and whatever, now worship the God of Israel, the one who created the sun and the moon and the stars and placed every star into the night sky. I read one Bible scholar suggest that the purpose of this book was to encourage its readers, to encourage you and me of two things, theological reflection and self-reflection. And I can't help but realize as I sift through this that Jonah showed a great deal of self-reflection in the midst of the storm. And his actions not only calmed the sea, but it also set God up on a tee to win the hearts of many. And so here's what I think that you and I can learn in the midst of certain storms in our lives. Here's what we can learn from this, that sometimes greater self-reflection can greater reflect God's compassion. right? If we're willing to look within ourselves, sometimes it's greater self-reflection in the moment, in the storm, that can greater reflect God's compassion for us. The more we are able to look at ourselves and our actions and our decisions and admit, hey, this might be on me. This might be my fault. The more opportunities we're creating for God to move in compassion in response to us. And here's the deal. It's likely there's a whole bunch of people that get to witness it too. It's likely that there's a whole bunch of other people who not only had a front row seat to the storm that was surrounding you, but who now have a front row seat to the compassion and to the grace and to the mercy of the God that you call out to in the midst of the storm that you're in. And so I don't know about you today. I don't know where you're at. I don't know what life is like as you walk in here, but I wonder of some of the situations we're in, right? And I started to think some of you are maybe in the midst of a financial storm right now. And once again, I get it. I know this isn't feel good. I just think it could do good and lead to good, right? So some of you, you're in the midst of a financial storm. And if you were really honest with yourself, you could admit that it's not because your employer isn't paying you fairly, or it's not because your landlord or your mortgage lender is charging you unfairly, at least not more unfairly than all of the rest of us in the country right now. It's most likely that you maybe have just not managed your finances in a way that God or your financial planner would suggest. Okay, what an amazing opportunity to get things right and to honor God and to let the world watch as God responds to you. Right? Some of you are in a marital storm right now. And yes, it always takes two to tango, but the reality is you have spent the most of your marriage focused on where your spouse has gotten out of step. Well, he always and she never, and you should see how he... Imagine the compassion that you and your spouse could experience from God if you'd ask God to search your heart and to reflect on yourself long enough to say, hey, this might be my fault. I'm not sure that I've done my part to make the two of us whole, to make the two of us one. Imagine the ripple effect that could be felt by your kids and by your closest friends and your community if you were to take responsibility for the current state of the way things were, right? Some of you are in a relational storm right now. And if you were really honest just with yourself or with God or with close friends, if you were really honest, you maybe would even admit that these kinds of relational storms seem to follow you wherever you go. And so rather than always pointing the finger at what someone else did or what someone else said, rather than searching for the fault in others, which you will always find, by the way, if that's what you're doing, because number one, your brain will find what it's looking for. And number two, no one is perfect, right? So rather than just searching for someone to blame, what if you reflected on yourself? What if you asked God to search your own heart, and in humility and in bravery, you said, maybe this is all my fault. The compassion that God could release, it could get the attention of a whole community who is most likely watching the storm that surrounds you, right? Some of you, maybe you would admit that you're in some kind of spiritual storm right now. Life feels hard. Maybe you feel confused. Maybe God feels absent, or God feels distant, or God feels silent. And if you were honest with yourself, you may also admit that you have continually run in the opposite direction of God. You've continually run in the opposite direction of where God is calling you, and yet the temptation is to blame God for where it is that you ended up, or to blame God for what it is you're experiencing when you ran in the opposite direction to get there. Imagine how you could reflect and highlight and shine a big spotlight on God's compassion if your own self-reflection in the moment led you to a place where you could admit, maybe this is my fault. I don't know what kind of chaos exists for you today, but I do wonder what kind of calm could be waiting for you. I do wonder what kind of compassion God could respond with. I do wonder what kind of victories you could claim if you were quicker to acknowledge in some of the storms that maybe this is all my fault. It's maybe not the most spiritual example, but I got a taste of this just this past week in a way that I think highlights what it is I'm getting at. Not the most spiritual example, but I think it might help. I was coaching my son Ole's flag football team last week, and I was filling in for our head coach who couldn't be there. And he has an iPad with this playmaking app that animates some of the offensive plays that we use for the guys. Well, I forgot to plug in the iPad before the game, and so we showed up, and it was dead. And so I had to just do the play calling on my own. And I'll tell you what, the first half, our huddles were horrible, okay? The boys are having trouble paying attention and the play clock is always running. You got to snap the ball. And I'm barking out, plays, and I'm barking out positions and pointing fingers and grabbing a hold of guys' jerseys, trying to get their attention. My quarterback, running back, like fake handoff to Jose on this side and then look for Jasper on the other side to get a pass 5 yards down to, and we break the huddles and the boys are confused. They're like, where am I? Who's the center? What's this side? And what's the other side? And what play are we running? We're like, oh my goodness. And it's just, chaotic. And we're stepping up to the line of scrimmage and they're looking back at us and we're getting penalties for not being set or for a delay game or for illegal motion. And it's a disaster. Okay. And everyone is getting frustrated. We're not scoring. We're not even moving the ball down the field. It was like 5 yards maybe. And then we are punting. It was a disaster. And me and the other coaches, we're getting frustrated. Them, we're like, line up. No, listen to the play. No, not that side. The other side. No, we didn't say hand. We said pass. Don't have. And we're frustrated with them as they're looking frustrated at us. And it was just chaos. And at halftime, it hit me. This is all my fault. Okay, I'm not setting, tugging on their jerseys and pointing, I'm not setting them up for success. And so with the referees blew the whistle, it's halftime, and I said, hey, we're the Colts. Hey, Colts, huddle up. I brought them in together, and I said, boys, we seem a little confused out there. And they're all like nodding their heads. And I said, you know what? I said, boys, that's on me. Okay, I'm not making this stuff up. This was our halftime huddle. We brought them together. I said, boys, we're confused. I can see it. I said, that's on me. I said, I know it. I said, I'm not making the plays very clear. I'm not making it very clear what your position is supposed to do and where you're supposed to be. And so I said, hey, the second half, we all need to work on getting a little bit better. And I said, guys, that starts with me. I got to set us up for success. Okay, the second half came along, and I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't just like a little chaotic still, because these are second and third graders, okay? But here's the deal. We started putting some plays together. We started moving the ball down the field, and in the final moments, we pulled out a victory, our first win of the season, and the boys were loving every single second of it. They showed up to practice still on Tuesday. They're still on cloud nine. They're recounting all the greatest plays and doing the play-by-play in the final moments that won us the game. Midcurrent, I want us to start winning in life. I want us to start moving the ball down the field in a way that we maybe haven't before. I want our families and our marriages and our communities and our neighborhoods to start winning. And I think at times it might just start with us. Greater self-reflection. can truly reflect God's compassion in greater ways and in ways that the world around us is desperate to see and to experience. And so let's do our part, you and me. Let's do our part, Mid-Current Church, to show it to them. Let me pray for us. God, we give you thanks first and foremost for your incredible compassion and your grace and your mercy for us, God, that accompanies us in the midst of challenging times, God, that accompanies us even in the midst of ways that we might be challenged in our faith or in our life here on this earth, God. And God, today I'm just praying that you would help us to take a look at ourselves, God, to just pray honest prayers. God, search my heart. And God, if there's any areas where we sense that we might be wanting to or needing to move the ball down the field, God, if there's any storms in our life, any chaos that we are praying would turn into calm, God, I pray that you might just help us to see if and where there might be some places where we just need to raise our hand and say, maybe this is on me. And God, if that's the case, would you help us? God, would you give us courage? Would you remind us of your grace to do the hard work and to take the hard next steps, knowing that you are by our side, God, knowing that you are for us even in those moments, God, not against us. Would you remind us of your grace for us, even as we pursue the hard and the challenging next steps that you might want us to take, God? And as we do, it is our prayer that more people in the world around us would get a sense of how truly compassionate you are, how ready you are, God, to move towards us when our hearts are turned toward you. So God, would you help us to know where, to know when, to know how to take responsibility for the things in our life that are maybe holding us back from where we'd like to be, God, or where you have called us to be as well. We pray these things in the name of your son, Jesus, who is such a perfect picture and example of your grace and mercy for us. God, we pray these things in his name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Mid-Current Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Mid-Current Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.